The 29th of March, 2025. So tomorrow will be the closing day of the winter retreat. And so there is that feeling that the change of seasons, the change, the pulse of the year at the Bayagiri, perhaps thinking about plans, what we're going to do next. Of course, you know, this is always a good time to reflect that the practice doesn't stop. And many of us will just be staying here and continuing our practice. Some of us may be looking forward to having work periods and a bit more communal structure. Some of us may be dreading it, but whatever the case, then mindfulness, if there's samasati, right mindfulness, then any of these two reactions, any way we're holding the end of a retreat can be useful as long as there's mindfulness attached to it. Anything we experience can be to our benefit if there's mindfulness attached to it. And that's one of the themes in the Lungpa Liam talk that I read yesterday, I read last night, is that with mindfulness, with intelligence, wisdom, awareness, then any state can be made to be beneficial for us. Even things like greed or anger, how can those be beneficial? They can be beneficial in that they can show us the suffering that they cause us, but we only get to see that with mindfulness. And then that's one of the positive aspects of impermanence, of the reflection on impermanence, is that things that aren't going well for us that can and will change. So there's the kind of negative side we think of sometimes. If the things are going well, then that's going to change. So don't get too attached to it. So that's kind of something we might tell ourselves when we think about impermanence. But also, when things aren't going well, that too will pass, that too will change. So the Buddha's teaching is it's all about arising and passing away. It's all about the beginning and ending of things. So when we think about the winter retreat, think about the beginning of it, the middle of it, the end. Think about January. It might seem like it's so long ago. And February, how did the energy change? How did the feelings change? In March, how did the energy change? How did the feelings change? And then coming to the end of the retreat, how does the energy change? How does the feelings change? And then reflecting, that's part of mindfulness. It's linked with memory and it, reflecting on our experience over the course of the winter retreat. That's important to do. So thinking a little bit about just meditation, just coming back to the basics, coming back to the beginning, back to just reminders about the basics of meditation, and then try to take into account some of the advice that the various ajahns, we heard readings of various Kruba ajahns, and some people read suttas. And so some of the advice, taking that all together, a lot of it, the themes are very basic. The themes are just coming back to a sense of being in the present moment and patient endurance and the sense of having goodwill for oneself and others. And there's living in community and the relational aspect of the practice. It's something I think is a theme that Lungpa Liam, there was a few talks that were read during the retreat, plus the talk last night, he's talking about relationships. Everything is relational. So we relate to each other, and also we relate to everything around us. Everything is relational. How we relate to ourselves. We look at how we relate to ourselves. We look at how we relate to each other. We look at how we relate to our requisites, the things we use in our lives, and just how we relate to the various experiences that we have through the day, whether it's warm or cold, whether things are comfortable or uncomfortable, whether we're experiencing sickness or health, then there's a relational aspect to the practice. So we look at the relationship and however the relationship is, and whatever we decide to make that relationship, that's going to define our life and build our character over time. And with the meditation practice, with that, the basic daily practice that we do, then it's relational. We might, depending on our character, we're going to relate to it in a different way. So sometimes if we have what we call the vitaka charita, the character that thinks a lot, likes to think, likes to solve problems and come up with good solutions, then we might relate to our mind or heart as kind of something that has defilements and to be solved. There needs to be a solution. We need to figure it out. So we might think a lot about how to figure it out. Or if we have more of the faith type, the satta charita, then the faith type might relate to the practice in the way of just wanting to bliss out and just kind of reflecting on the Buddha, reflecting on the Dhamma, reflecting on the Sangha, feeling great happiness and joy coming up based on that. Or just believing the teachings. The drawback of being a satta charita, faith type, is that we might just believe it without investigating. And then there's the kind of dosa charita, the anger type. And if we're the anger type, then we might be very critical and judgmental of ourselves and others. And that's the relationship. That's how we relate to the practice. And the greed type, that's the raga charita, might think of how we can get something for ourselves, even if it maybe is at the expense of others. And we might proliferate a lot about that. But all of these have a benefit and a drawback. But I'm just trying to point this out to say that that's going to be the different those different character types is going to define the different ways that we relate to the meditation practice. There's the moha charita, the delusion type, just kind of the mind floats away. The mind blips in and out, it floats away. And there needs to be that kind of more steady focus. And it might relate, the moha charita, the delusion type, might relate to the practice in terms of just looking for that sense of comfort and floating away with it. So there's these different ways that we can relate to the practice. So if we think of metta kamatana, how important this is, and I think I'll just emphasize that because that seems to be what most of us need. And we need that sense of connection. So we're all seeking connection. And if we have metta for ourselves, then we can connect with the meditation. But it's a difficult one to have. So how many of us can say to ourselves, may I be well, may I be happy, and actually mean it, or it's not just an empty phrase? So I had this, practicing with this for a while in my ninth pansa. Before that, I kind of felt like, yeah, metta practice, that's kind of not that important. I need to be doing these kind of austere practices and just not really focusing on that soft stuff. So then I eventually saw the importance of it, and wow, this is difficult, having genuine goodwill for myself. So I took the practice on fairly diligently. I was living at Pochumgom at the time and doing a lot of walking meditation. There's not much to do there. Actually, there's so little to do that each day would seem like 2 days. There's just, even the sweeping or the duties, there's just so little to do there except just be with the mind. And doing this walking meditation, thinking, may I be well, may I be happy. May I abide in well-being and freedom from affliction and freedom from hostility and freedom from ill will and freedom from anxiety. May I maintain well-being in myself, that over and over again. May I abide in well-being, and so on and so on. And something wasn't really clicking with it. It's kind of like an empty phrase, just using that phrase as a meditation object, but it was just an empty phrase and not really having so much of an effect on me. And after a while of practicing that, perhaps days, there's a whole period of time of taking that on as a practice. And then saying, okay, well, what's going on here? And can I maybe shift focus again a bit? You know, why can't I say this and have this feeling that I really mean it? May I be well and really mean it, really. May I truly be well. May I genuinely be well. Why can't I do that? And thinking, okay, this is difficult. There's some sort of block. There's some sort of obstacle there. And started to see after a period of time practicing with this that there needed to be some discernment around it. So maybe I could investigate how am I not wishing myself well? Maybe I'll take it from that angle. Maybe there's some way I'm not wishing myself well. So kind of started investigating in that way. And then that eventually led to, okay, well, maybe I'll try this. Just rather than may I be well, just try the phrase, you know, I don't hate myself. Okay. I don't hate myself. Let's try that. And then the mind kind of saying, yes, you do. And oh, okay, there's something. I uncovered something. So there was a bit of the obstacle sort of got uncovered. And no, I don't. I genuinely don't hate myself. I really like myself. And the other voice, no, you know, that's not true. You're not being genuine. You're not being genuine if you say that. You have to be genuinely, yes, you're not likable. You're not, you have this and that fault and so on. So, okay, well, I've uncovered something there. So, so then the next step was, well, how can I be genuine? So this is where we can make progress in the practice if we see something like that. And this is where we can have progress and breakthroughs. And sometimes we might feel that it's not genuine if we don't go along with what's really there already. But if we just go along with what's really there already, feeling like that's being genuine, then we won't ever make any progress. We won't ever overcome those obstacles that exist for us. We won't ever be unseating the defilements in the end. So then it became... What came up next was an aditana. I refuse to hate myself. I refuse to not have goodwill for myself. So, taking that next step rather than saying, well, you know, I don't like myself. That's just the way it is. And I'm being genuine and I'm just going to admit it and I'm just going to accept it. And that's it. So that would just keep things, yeah, the way they are. Okay, I see it, but I'm just going to accept it and not going to do anything about it. Or make that determination. I refuse to continue to relate to myself that way. Heart-opening experience that results from that. So I just bring that up because that particular experience is why I've been able to stay ordained, because there was that connection. So there's... If we get that connection, we're not going to have to seek it from anywhere else. That's the refuge. We don't have to go outside. We don't have to seek that anywhere else if we achieve that connection. So that's a strong connection when we learn how to have just genuine goodwill for ourselves. And it's something very basic, but also something very primary and necessary just to be able to have genuine goodwill for oneself. And that's the beginning of building up being a refuge unto oneself. And again, that's something Wangpa Liem stresses quite a bit, and what he talked about in his talk last night is how to become a refuge unto yourself. So we really do have to have that goodwill for ourselves. And if we don't connect in that way, if we aren't able to connect with ourselves in that way, then we're just going to keep seeking that connection from outside, seeking it somewhere else, because there'll be that sense of lack, there'll be that hole in the heart that needs to be filled. But the metta for oneself, it's very profound that the Buddha teaches this, because that's really how to fill that sense of lack for ourselves, and it's not dependent on anyone or anything outside. So that's one way to start to, that's the relationship. That's how to relate to ourselves, how to relate to the practice, whatever our character type, starting to use discernment to see where are we at, where are we stuck, and what are the obstacles. And then when we uncover that, rather than saying, well, that's just the way it is, and I guess I'm not being genuine if I push that away or if I try to do something about it. But if it's doing harm to us, it's good to change it. It's good to have some sense of not just pushing it away, but working with it to transform it into something more useful for ourselves. So that kind of thing, then there seems to be something where the way we relate to ourselves is then the way we relate to others. So that started to make much more sense to me that, oh yeah, the Buddha says spread metta to yourself before spreading it to others. Well, it just seems very natural that we're going to relate to others in the way we relate to ourselves. So if we're very critical and judgmental with ourselves, we'll tend to be very critical and judgmental with others. That's just an example. If we have genuine goodwill for ourselves and we have that sense of connection with ourselves, that'll tend to spread out in a very natural way to others. We don't need to think, may you be well, may you be happy, may all beings be well, may all beings be happy, because if we already have that for ourselves, it's only natural that it's going to radiate out in that way. So uncertainty, that's another thing. That's a Lompa Cha teaching, Maine, hallmark of Lompa Cha's teaching. And I think it's extremely relevant. I mean, it's always relevant. The Buddha's teachings are always relevant, but extremely relevant in terms of, you know, we might feel afraid at the state of the world or whatever. You know, for people who might follow the news, and whatever news you decide to follow, whatever type of news, I would say that it's all maine, it's all not sure. It's very important to put that not sure label on it, because we might feel like, oh, it's all falling apart, and then this or that friend agrees with me, this or that friend doesn't agree with me, they have a different view about things than me, than I do, they have different political views than me. I like this person because they have the same views as me. I don't like that person because they have different views than me. But that's all just the world and the defilements. It's good to understand that Mara owns the world. The defilements are always going to win in terms of the world. The defilements, the world is the world of the defilements. So it's unfortunate that it is that way. Yeah, it'd be wonderful if everybody could get along and nobody would kill each other and we lived in a Shangri-La utopia. That would be wonderful. And perhaps there, you know, even in the suttas, the Buddha talks about these mythical wheel-turning monarch and these kind of great times when the human lifespan is very, very long and everybody is virtuous and there's no war and no killing and so on. But that's not where we're at right now. That's not where we're at right now. And just to hope, you know, bemoan the situation and just to hope that it's going to get better somehow or to get upset about it, I don't think that's going to help very much. So it comes back to that sense of, and I don't think, you know, yeah, like people are talking about like leaving the country. I don't think that's very helpful, because what is that? I mean, like, we make ourselves as good as possible. We are just a drop. We can be wholesome drops in the bucket. And, you know, that if we just give rise to anger and frustration, then that's a drop in the bucket that's the bucket we don't want. We don't want to be adding drops to that bucket. If we have anger and frustration, we're just adding more drops to that bucket. But if we have goodwill for ourselves and others, and we're as kind as possible, as helpful as possible, and we really make ourselves into genuine human beings as much as possible with the practice of Sila Samadhi Panya, especially like looking at the virtue, the external virtue, the internal virtue, and living in that way, that's incredibly helpful. That's incredibly helpful, and that's a drop in the bucket in tipping the scale at least a little bit. You know, we're not going to be able to tip the scale of the world in terms of goodness, but we can tip it a little bit in terms of our circle, our own little world here. And I think that's incredibly important to recognize. We can't go out and change the society as a whole. We can't cause anyone else in society to let go of anger or hatred or whatever, but we can do that for ourselves. And then we can, in doing that for ourselves, we can have an effect on the people that we have a relationship with. So there's that relational aspect again. So I think that's incredibly important. One is the not sure aspect of all things. So not to just believe whatever we see, believe whatever we hear. And also that cultivation of virtue and putting those drops of goodness into that bucket that we want to get heavier and heavier. We want the goodness bucket to be heavier. We don't want to add the drops to the anger and frustration bucket, because that's the very thing that we're angry and frustrated about. That's the thing we don't want. We want the goodness. So let us, and moving forward, let us cultivate as much goodness as possible, come what may, against all odds, cultivating goodness and well-being, metta and kindness and a helpful attitude for one another, come what may, against all odds, whatever negativity we might see and or hear about in the world, then coming at it, relating to it, reacting to it first with mindfulness and knowing, okay, that sounds really awful, not sure, or that sounds really great, not sure, and let's react with kindness, compassion. That's what we can do. That's what we can do for ourselves. Compassion is another one, because so I think talking a little bit about metta, it's worth talking about karuna or compassion as well, because every being in the world is where they're at for a reason based on causes and conditions. And the huge percentage of beings in the world, say if we just talk about human beings, have an immense amount of suffering. There is so much suffering in the world. So much suffering in the world. And that's worthy of compassion. Compassion is just that heartfelt wish that ourselves and others be free of suffering. If we talk about the suttas, then we talk about metta, the sense of goodwill, or even we could use pure love as a translation that I like. That sense of pure love as opposed to impure love. So pure love, or it doesn't have any conditions or motives attached to it or agendas attached to it. So that's when we wish happiness, genuinely wish happiness for ourselves and wish happiness for others. May I be well, may I be happy, may others be well, may others be happy. That's the focus of metta. And then the focus of karuna, it's a little bit more difficult, it's a little bit more advanced. The focus is more on suffering. The focus with metta is more on happiness, and the focus with karuna is more about suffering. May I be free of suffering, may others be free of suffering. And then that has to be done with a foundation of upekkha, of equanimity. If we don't come from a place of equanimity, then the suffering of the world will become overwhelming for us. And some people who have a lot of parami may be able to hold that type of suffering. But for most of us, we do have to start with equanimity. and actually, or else we'll just get bowled over when we realize the extent of the suffering of the world, when we really start to feel it. But with real compassion, if compassion is a big part of our practice and we really take it on, then we'll start to really get a sense and really feel the suffering of the world and feel there is so much suffering. It's so overwhelming. It's so unbelievable how much suffering there is. And we really feel that. But then really having that foundation of upekkha and okay, well, there's, I feel it, but there's nothing I can do about it other than just cultivate my own practice and add to that bucket of goodness. You know? So then that's the relationship to the suffering of the world, is cultivate my own goodness. Then there are those times where there's mudita, the rejoicing in the goodness. There is, we know good people, we come into contact with good people, and that's worthy of rejoicing over. So we can even rejoice in our own goodness, not in a proud or puffed up way, not out of vanity, but actually these little victories in our practice. Oh, I actually did genuinely cultivate goodwill for myself, or I actually did sit for longer than I thought I could sit in the meditation. I actually have cultivated my practice for every day for the last 7 days, for the last week, or for the last 3 months. I've actually done this. I've actually faced some difficulties. I've actually gotten through it. So that's worthy of rejoicing. So mudita is about keeping the mind in a uplifted, we call in Thai baojai, or lighthearted, you know, lighthearted state. And rejoicing is also a direct way to remove resentment. In the removal of resentment sutta, the Buddha talks about using mudita as a removal of resentment. So, and it may be something small. We may resent somebody just because they annoy us. For example, we may work with somebody and we just find them irritating and annoying, and then over time the resentment builds up. But then can we actually shift the focus, that relationship, to what's good about that person? To what they may be, their little victories or things they may have done which were genuinely impressive. And then rejoicing in that, making that the main focus, that's a removal of resentment. And then upekkha is the last Brahma Vihara. But that can be used for those first three as a foundation. But then upekkha, equanimity, as its own thing, as its own practice, the way we cultivate that is actually the reflection on kamma. So that's the I am the heir of my kamma, born of my kamma, related to my kamma, abide supported by my kamma. Whatever kamma I will do for good or for ill of that, I will be the heir. I alone will receive the results of whatever actions of body, speech, and mind I have cultivated and am cultivating in the present. And others, whatever kamma they have done, they have to receive the results of that. Nobody else is going to receive it for them. So that is what the Buddha said leads to equanimity. Because whatever kamma others do, they themselves reap the results of that. Whatever kamma we do, we ourselves reap the results of that. It's quite a profound and subtle reflection, this reflection on kamma. It's hard to see. Some kammas we may be able to see fairly clearly, like us thinking about, oh, what's the kamma of having this back and leg pain that I had? You know, what did I do wrong? What did I do? But then actually seeing it in a more obvious way, yeah, maybe there is some sort of esoteric cause, or maybe I, you know, cut a being's leg off in a past life or something, but the way I've been lifting things is not correct, so it caused this disc in the back to pop out and hit the nerve, and then that caused all this pain. So that's also kamma, that's cause and effect. And I myself did those actions in that way, and therefore this result happened. And then now that this result is happening, now I can respond to it in a different way. Say, okay, well, that first way of responding, that first way of relating led to this, so now I can relate in a different way. I can make an adjustment. And then that's coming back again and again to this Lompa Lien teaching, adaptation, being able to adapt. So rather than saying, well, I messed up and it's all over, I might as well give up, say, okay, well, there were mistakes made, let's adapt. Let's see what worked, what didn't work. Let's make some adaptions. Let's make some adjustments. Let's learn from this and continue moving forward. So this is also one part of just the life of learning, of the training, the learning that we do here. We come here to learn how to adapt, learn how to adapt ourselves in a way that our actions of body, speech, and mind are going to tend more towards the wholesome, lean more towards the wholesome. And through that, the sense of energy and well-being and light, lightheartedness, light in the mind, light in the heart. That's going to come about based on the wholesome mind, based on the pure mind. It doesn't just come about through getting things just right with the body. Certainly, having a comfortable, functioning body can be very helpful, and we shouldn't take that for granted. Sajjan Amaro would like to say, we're all TABS, temporarily abled bodies. So if we have the pure mind, it's not as dependent on the body, and that's where that sense of long-term well-being and being a refuge unto oneself is going to come from. So if we think of the entirety of the winter retreat, and the winter retreat crew has been considered a very low-maintenance crew, and they've been just getting on with things. I was helping to manage that crew, but of course I had this pain event that I had to deal with for the past month, so I haven't been really in the loop so much, but we have a retreat crew that's just been looking after us, looking after the monastery, and I just want to say Anumodana to their goodwill, to their practice as well. It's been a long period of time. 3 months is considered a long retreat, but then it's just now it's coming to an end. So there was that beginning part, the middle part, and the end part, and there's hopefully all of us have learned something from it. So whether we learn something or not is really the gauge of how things are going. If it was a good retreat, that means we learned something from it. If we had some good experiences, but maybe we didn't learn so much about ourselves, then it might not be quite as good as if we suffered, but we learned from it. I think that's a appropriate amount of time for this evening, and so just to wish everybody well as we move forward with our various plans, whether we're staying here or whether we're moving out into a different mode or going our various directions. And I'll say a few more words during the closing ceremony tomorrow at 7 p.m. But I think just for some reflections for this evening, to by way of a little bit of summary, a little bit of reflections on metta and the Brahmaviharas, and just some kind of suggestions for how to relate to ourselves, how to relate to the world. I think that's appropriate for this evening, so I'll leave it at that.